Okay, this morning we're going to talk a little bit. I guess basically it's just going to be a little lesson on how a Christian should interact with an abiblical government. The government of the United States is set up in the way that it is, but it's not, in a sense, completely biblical. You can't go into the Bible and find this is the way governments should be set up. But it is structured in such a way that it can facilitate the Judeo-Christian ethic. So we've got that going for it. But we're going to talk about, but you know, in a sense, any way you look at it, this the government, not because of the way that it's structured in and of itself, but because of the people running it, is corrupt. There are corruptions within it. There's corrupt things about it. And we're going to talk about that. How should a Christian interact with these things? And the reason I say this is because most professing Christians really don't know how this government works. And because of that, they come to fallacious conclusions. They come to conclusions that don't line up with the way things actually should be looked at. Okay? So, knowing how this government works and how it should relate within a biblical aspect is very important from us. A lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people, it's either all or none. We can't participate in this government or have anything to do with this government because it's of the world, and it's, you know, some people have this two kingdom idea where all the governments of the world are under the Satan's kingdom and that sort of foolishness. But we know from Romans chapter 13 and other places in the Bible that all the authorities are of God. Now they might not be ruled and run according to the scriptures, but they are of God. The people running them and ruling them and that have the power are doing it contrary to God in many cases. And that's what happens within a government. Go to Esther. We're going to look at something. Let's go to Job and hang a left. Now we know from the book of Esther that Ahasuerus, he wasn't such just this righteous king. He wasn't all, you know, great and wonderful. He was really a kind of a, he was a very corrupt king. He was wicked and all sorts of things. And we know how Esther got into the position she did. We call her Queen Esther, but was she the queen of the realm? In a sense, yes, she was, because she was just the highest on the totem pole. When Mordecai comes to her and asks her to go to the king, she hadn't seen him in a long time. So it's not as though the king and queen had this married relationship to where they ruled on the thrones. And no, she was just basically the number one in the harem, basically. But she was, over time, garnered his affections. And she was able, because of her following of God and the way she did it, she was able to get his ear, so to speak. It wasn't as though they had this great relationship together in a sense of husband and wife. She hadn't seen him in a long time. She was very concerned about that. Mordecai, if I go before him, I hadn't seen him in a long time. He might have me executed. You don't just go before the king, even the queen. So that's the situation they were in. Ahasuerus was not this great, wonderful, benevolent king that some might want to put him up to because of the end results here. His affections for Esther grew, and that's what prompted him to make the decisions he did. But look in chapter 3 of Esther. And we have in chapter 3, Haman going before the king and setting up kind of almost a false premise. He didn't come out and lie either, though, did he? But he comes out and he says, there's this faction of people in your kingdom who don't agree with your rules and your laws. Wow, what does that sound like? Do I agree with all of the laws that have been set forth by the United States of America? No way. A lot of them are antichrist, opposed to Jesus and his ways. There's no doubt about that. The Jews were not all in with Ahasuerus. They were opposed to much of his ruling of the kingdom. They were. But he tricks Ahasuerus because Ahasuerus doesn't know. If Esther had not been a Jew, do you think this would have been stopped? No. He was a wicked king. He was not a good king. Or, you know, benevolent king. But he goes, Haman goes, and he prompts the king. And he says, if it please the king, let it be written that they, those people, you know, among people in the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws, okay? They don't like your laws, king. So he says, if it please the king, let it be written that they may be, in verse 9, that they may be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver in the hands of those that have the charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the Jews' enemy. And the king said unto Haman, the silver is given unto thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee. Yeah, that's great. I got people in my kingdom that don't like my laws and don't like the way I'm doing things. Fine. Destroy them. What a wonderful king. Then were the king's scribes called on the 13th day of the first month, and there was written according to all that Haman had commanded unto the king's lieutenants and to the governors that were over every province and to the rulers of every people of every province according to the writing thereof and to every people after their language in the name of the king Ahasuerus, was it written and sealed with the king's ring. Now there you have it. Now what are the Jews going to do? There's this law, this new law that's been written in the king's name and sealed by the king's ring. What does that mean? Look over at chapter 8 real quick. We all know the whole story, so we don't need to go in depth to it. Look at chapter 8 and verse 8. And the last phrase in verse 8, the second half of it. It says, for the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, may no man reverse. This is the law of the Medes and Persians. It's explained also in Daniel about how a law that has been set into effect cannot be changed. Nobody can change it. You can't reverse it. That's what got Daniel supposedly into hot water when they put him in the lion's den. Darius couldn't change the law. Even the king couldn't change it once it was set in force. Okay? That's very important there. What are they going to do now? Haman has set the motions in forth that all the Jews are to be destroyed. Well, let's just go to the king. Mordecai goes to Esther and says, Esther, go to the king and tell him that this is awful and that he needs to change it. Could he do that? Could the king change his dictate, his ordinance? The king himself could not take a magic pen and just erase and wipe away or line through the law that had been written. The king himself could not do that. It would have been illegal. There was a certain code of law even that the kings kept here. You understand that? That's very important. So what did Mordecai and Esther do? Did they say, oh, this is despicable. We're not having anything to do with this government. I'm not going to do anything with this. We're going to stand and let God protect us. Did they do that? Oh, they did believe God could protect them. But did they do nothing? Did they ridicule Ahasuerus and Haman? And say, I can't believe it. We're not going to have anything to do with this. No. They worked within the realms of the law to get the situation changed. And it didn't just happen like that. The king couldn't just scratch it out and say, okay, we're not doing that. No, that couldn't happen. And we know what happens. Esther goes to King Ahasuerus. And the king Ahasuerus said in chapter 8, let's see. Then were the king's scribes called, there after verse 8. Well, let's say what it's, let's read what it says. Go to verse 7. Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Okay, now, it's already happened. Esther's gone before the king. King got mad. They hang Haman. Well, hey, easy. Just wipe the law away, right? Haman's gone. Can't do that. It would be illegal. According to the structure of the law of the Medes and Persians. Right? Okay. And in verse 8, write ye also for the Jews, as it liketh you, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring. In other words, now we have another law. Okay, we're making another law. It's written in the king's name and sealed with his ring. No man can change it, right? Okay. Then, in verse 9, where the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, that is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews, and to the lieutenants, and to the deputies, and the rulers of the provinces, which are from India unto Ethiopia, the whole kingdom, 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language. He lays it out complete all over the kingdom in every language it can be read, right? And he wrote in the king Ahasuerus' name and sealed it with the king's ring and sent the letters by post on horseback and the riders on mules and camels and dromedaries. Wherein the king granted the Jews which were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for light for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them. In other words, the king has set forth a law now that said the Jews can defend themselves. Rise up and defend yourself. So now there's a law that's going to protect the Jews. They can rise up and defend themselves. No man can change that. So do you understand what happened here? They used the system and the law as it was in the structure of that country in order to facilitate their end desires and to gain what it is that they needed. They went through the steps, right? It wasn't just miraculously done. A lot of people died. I don't think any Jews died. I think all the Jews came out good. A lot of other people did. So it wasn't just something that was wiped away. The king couldn't even do it. That's the point I want to make specifically. And the fact that Mordecai and Esther worked within the system to facilitate the end that they wanted to come out. Daniel does the same thing throughout. All the kings that Daniel worked on, Daniel was a member of the government. He was a government official in all of these corrupt governments. From Nebuchadnezzar to Belshazzar, he was wicked. Daniel even went before him and told him, you're in the balances. You're found wanting. You're about to die. The Medes and Persians are going to come in and take this place. Daniel didn't hold anything back from him. But he worked within the structure and system of government to get things done that he wanted done, that needed to be done. When it came to the point where they told him, you cannot worship God, he resisted. Did he resist every single law in Babylon? No. He didn't resist the whole structure. All one fell swoop. He was a member. He was a government official. But when it came to him not worshiping God, they're telling him he couldn't worship God. Or the others, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they had to worship the image of something else. That's when they said, No. How many people you think were innocent and were put to death in the reign of Nebuchadnezzar? Did Daniel refuse to work with Nebuchadnezzar? See, that's how some Christians are today. They think, I can't work with this corrupt government. Is that what Esther did? Well, she didn't have a choice. Yes, she did. She could have died. She could have stood for the glory of God and refused to work with Ahasuerus and to refuse to be his queen, and she'd have been executed. Right? She had a choice. Daniel had a choice. I'm not working with you. No, I'm not going to be one of your ministers. No. Mm-mm. You're corrupt. He had a choice, didn't he? He could have stood for the glory of God and said, no, I'm not going to do work in this corrupt government. Too many wicked laws. I'm not going to work with you or in this government at all. He could have. That would have killed him. He had a choice, right? So where are we? Let's go to Luke chapter 16 for a minute. I want to show you something. In Luke chapter 16 here, we have a parable that Jesus is telling to his disciples. There's a lot here. There's principle here that needs to be expounded upon. Because a lot of people, they don't get this. They're like, I don't understand. A lot of people, they skip over, they don't want to talk about it, they don't even want to look at it, because it seems to be saying something contrary to their beliefs. Listen to what Jesus says. And Jesus said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest no longer be steward. For thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig, in other words, manual labor. To beg, I am ashamed. I'm not just going to go begging on the street. I don't want to do physical labor. He says, I am resolved what to do. When I am put out of the stewardship, he's still steward, right? Because his boss says, look, you bring an account to me, and if it doesn't match up with everything, if you have been stealing from me, you're going to be gone. So bring the accounts, let's look at them. That's what he said. Okay, so he's still the steward. Now he's saying, I'm guilty, I'm about to be put out. So I'm resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me unto their houses. Those other people, right? Okay. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors unto him, and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my Lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. I'm giving you a discount. Cut some off of there. Is that ethical? I don't know. Then said he to another, and how much owest thou? And he said unto him, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill and write 80. Write 80. You owe 100? Change it to 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward because he had done wisely. Now, here's what you don't understand, what a lot of people don't understand about this. That steward, because of his position, had every right to do that. It was in his control. He could do that if he wanted to. And he did. And how did he do it? And why did he do it? To make friends of the others. So that whenever he's out and he's put out of this job, he's done favors that he can call in. Right? What did Jesus say about that? For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. Jesus said that was wise. Now, a lot of people look at that and say, he stole from his boss. No, well, he had the power to do that. Jesus said the children of this generation, of this world, are wiser than the children of light. Why is that? Because this guy used his ability and he used the structure that he was under in order to facilitate his own ends. Right? The children of the world and their generations do that all the time. You know how long the Democrats and the socialists have been working to put in motion the things that are now law? A long time. They don't care if they take a baby step. In fact, that's their method. The methods that the children of the world in this generation are using have brought us to where we are. They say, I want to push you back 50 yards. And so the conservatives and the Republicans and the Christians are like, no, you want to push us back 50 yards? That's awful, that's awful. Oh, well, you got a compromise. We need to get over there and we'll take a compromise. And we end up compromising them 10 yards. You know what happens a little later on? They push again. And they push again until ultimately they get that 50 yards. Because the children of light are not as wise as the children of the world in this generation. The children of light, you know what some Christians say? We either get 100% or we don't take nothing. That's foolish. We need to work within the realms of this law and this government in order to get to where we want to go. We could talk about abortion because it's probably the biggest, most volatile subject in this realm. You want to end abortion? You will never, ever, ever do it by wanting to take one big, long jump to 100%. You'll never do it. All you're going to do is be pushed back. You'll never get it. You'll never get it by fighting against the people who are against abortion too, but are willing to take those small steps to get what they want. Some people think that the president has the ability with some magic pen to just wipe away abortion. He can't do it. It's not legal. Ahasuerus couldn't even rescind his law to kill and destroy all the Jews. They'll accept that. But some Christians just think that Donald Trump or the president or whoever the president would be at the time can just ignore law and act above the law and do whatever he wants and just wipe away. If he's really pro-life, he should wipe away abortion. He can't. He can't do it. But he can work toward that goal. And when so-called Christians or professing Christians or Christians that have a misunderstanding of the way this government works end up saying, no, we're against him because he signed the budget agreement or whatever that has, you know, funding for Planned Parenthood. You're fighting. No president would not be able to sign that. Ted Cruz would have signed that. Anybody who complains that Trump signed it, if they were the president, they would have signed it. It's a budget deal. They would have signed it. There's no way around that. There was no legal recourse for him not to sign it. Now let me explain how this government works. The founders were very smart, okay? They set up a three-tier government. It's called the separation of powers. That's very important, okay? They didn't set up a democracy where just the majority could come in, you promise the majority something, and then the majority changes their mind or whatever. They didn't make a democracy to where everybody just votes and then the highest vote. They set up a representative republic. Now, what a representative republic is a republic to where the people vote representatives, somebody to represent them in the government. And that representative goes and he represents the people. Okay? But it's not just a representative republic. It is founded under something called rule of law. A representative government set up under rules of law. Now here's where it gets sticky. If the people don't put the right representatives in there, the laws can become corrupted. Okay? Back when the rulers, when the founders set up this government, there was a phrase, say, Rex Lex. Now what Rex Lex means is king is law. The king is law. Whatever the king said, that's the way, that's how the English monarchy was, okay? To a certain extent. Rex Lex, the king is law. Well, the founders, they didn't like that idea because it never works. King works on his own self-interest. So what they did, they said, no, 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 not Rex Lex, Lex Rex. The law is king. And that is the situation we are under right now. The law is king, or at least should be, because even the corrupt government officials don't keep it now. But this is where we're at, okay? So, we're under a representative republic who works by rule of law. So the founders divided the government into three categories, okay? Executive, judicial, I don't think I spelled it right, and legislative. Okay? Three branches of government. What we have, the legislative makes the laws. You understand that? Can the president, whether he's Donald Trump, Barack Obama, or Billy Graham or whoever, can he make law? Not under the structure of our government. He can't make a law. He can't make law. It would be what? Illegal. It would not be among the parameters of rule of law. The legislative branch has been set up to make the laws. Okay? The judicial branch, that's the courts, interprets the laws. What does that mean? They decide what the law actually means and whether it resides under the purview or under the structure of the Constitution. Okay? The judicial branch does that. Supreme Court. Think Supreme Court. Although it's all the courts. Okay? The executive branch. What does the executive branch do? As far as law is concerned. What's the word? The executive branch enforces the laws. So you have these three tiers of government here. The executive cannot write law. It only enforces it. The legislative makes the laws, judicial interprets the laws, and the executive enforces those laws as they are made and interpreted. Understand that? Now, this is why a president can't make a law and outlaw abortion. He can't make a law and just outlaw things or put certain laws into effect. He can't do it. It would be illegal. Just as illegal as Ahasuerus trying to negate his own law. It wouldn't have worked under that structure. It won't work under this structure. But what can they do? He can take little steps. Okay? The executive appoints judges. He's the one that appoints the judges. You want to end abortion? The only way the president himself can do it is to change it incrementally so that the judicial can interpret laws in such a way to affect the legislature to change the laws. Y'all understand that? Okay, you want to change? You want to outlaw abortion? You want to change some of the socialist liberal structure that's going about? You want to do that? You want the president to do that? There's only one way he can do it. He can put pressure on the legislature. The main way he can do it is to appoint judges. You want to stop all those things? Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, etc., etc. That's the power he's got. He can put pressure, but that's all he can do. These people, the people, we the people have the responsibility to put the legislature in power to make laws according to what we deem proper. You understand that? That's our responsibility. If a legislature doesn't do it, kick them out. Now, how is that going to happen if 20, 40, 60% of the Christians refuse to step into the ring to fight this thing incrementally a little bit? Who's going to take over the legislature? Kind of obvious, isn't it? Who's going to take over the legislature if Christians refuse to vote or refuse to take steps to make a difference in these laws? Who's going to take over? Obviously, the socialists and liberals are going to end up taking over. What kind of laws are they going to make? Are they going to make just laws? No, they're going to make corrupt laws. See, they're going to make corrupt laws. Where are we then? We have an executive that has to defend corrupt laws. Is that wise? That's not good, is it? But if he's going to remain executive, if the executive branch is going to remain effective, they have to uphold the laws. Even if they're corrupt laws. Do they need to be changed? Yes. But the only way to change them is to support an executive and a judicial that will make sure that that gets done, and to vote in the right people in the legislature that are going to make the laws according to our desires and not the socialists. It's not that hard. And it's not that difficult. Lex Rex, the law is king. Is we're using abortion for an example. Is abortion legal? Yeah. It's a corrupt law. What would happen? Okay, and this is a good question, because this is what's going to come, I'm going to explain next. What would happen if all of a sudden Roe versus Wade, that landmark Supreme Court decision that said a woman has a right to do with her body what she wants or whatever, it basically told the states that you can't tell a woman she can't have an abortion. What would happen if Roe versus Wade was overturned by a new Supreme Court? Would it end abortion? Nope. Wouldn't end it at all. Might even get worse in some places. Why is that? Because as soon as Roe versus Wade is overturned, that decision goes back into the purview of the states. And each individual state decides whether they want to have abortion legal or not. There's going to be a lot of states that say, yes, abortion should be legal all the way up until the time the child is 3 years old. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. They'll push it as far as they can get it. Other states are going to say, no, we no abortion at all. Other states are going to say, well, when the heartbeat starts. See, you've got people that if they were honest with themselves or consistent with their beliefs, these states like Georgia and I think Louisiana and Alabama, the others that are passing these laws, these heartbeat laws, that are saying no abortion after we can detect a heartbeat. Those Christians that think 100%, we don't take a little bit. We're not going to support somebody that only believes after the first trimester, no abortion. We want all of it. Well, they got to be consistent, because if life starts at conception, the heartbeat's what, 8 weeks later, 5-6 weeks later. What about the first 5 weeks? What about the first 6 weeks? You got to be consistent. Are you anti-abortion or are you pro-life? You cannot be, or if you're pro-life, you are anti-abortion. No way around it. But you can be anti-abortion and not pro-life. So anti-abortion that you don't care if you lose 25% of the babies that you could save by taking a small step like the liberals do, like Jesus to the children of this generation, the children of the world in this generation. Fighting back incrementally like they fight toward us. Don't let them take a stronghold. Start pushing back. But you can't push them all the way back to the start line. Not under a rule of law. So, Roe versus Wade's overturned. That goes back into the purview of the states. Now what happens? Now, and only at that point, can the laws of those states, whether it's Tennessee or whatever state it might be, only can those be brought forth before the judicial branch, before the Supreme Court, to decide whether or not it's constitutional. To whether the laws of those states uphold under the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution, only at that point. And at that point, a Supreme Court stacked with conservative judges that believe in life can then make law or interpret law, the Constitution, to decide whether or not it can be made, whether abortion is legal or not. You see the steps that have to be taken? Most people have no clue. They think Donald Trump can just, you know, erase abortion, erase Roe versus Wade. He can't do that. He can take the steps that he is taking. The first president in the history to go before the right to life thing that they had in person, he states there's been no president has ever, the child in the womb has never had a more vigorous advocate for them as me. That's what he says. You believe him? I believe him. I mean, why not? Just because he signed a budget agreement with Planned Parenthood in it? You think he's anti-pro-life or pro-choice, whatever? Pro-death? No, that's not the way this works. And he knows it. And anybody that has a understanding of the structure and the way the government works would know it too. He can't. He had no legal recourse but to sign the budget agreement. There was no legal reason he couldn't. You want to know about Planned Parenthood? Ask them. Ask Planned Parenthood what they think of Donald Trump. They hate him. They, on their website, and they talk about it, he's already defunded so much of this stuff and everything. We fought back and we've been able to stop some of it, but make no mistake about it, he's after us. That's what they say. You got professing Christians that are helping Planned Parenthood by fighting against the steps that it would need to be taken in order to totally defund them. The devil's sitting back there laughing. This is the structure of government. It's the only way it's going to happen. Under the laws and structure. And we as Christians are obligated to take the steps that need to be taken. Not bow out and say, oh no, we can't have 100% of everything we want right now in one fell swoop, so I'm not going to do anything about it. We're just going to criticize anybody else who tries to do anything to get this accomplished. If it's not all, we don't want any. Well, that's exactly what they're going to get. None. That's the way Esther did it and Mordecai. It's the way Daniel did it. It's the way Jesus instructs it to be done. working within, taking the steps that need to be taken to facilitate a certain end. Executive, judicial, and legislative. They were separated for a reason. The balance of powers are there for a reason. Some people are... One guy we know thinks balance of powers is about the Senate and the House of Representatives. So they should both be separate parties all the time to have a balance of power. That's stupid. That's not what balance of powers means. The balance of powers means that not one of these groups can totally run the government. Because then you'd have anarchy. You'd have trouble. Not anarchy. You'd have tyranny. Without this, you'd have anarchy. The laws that are on the books now need to be changed. The only way they can be changed is to walk through the steps to get them changed. If the president can appoint the right judges, we can get some things changed. Because some of the corrupt laws that are made here can be kicked out. Nope, that's not a good law. The people can vote in the right people that make the laws. The president has the power to veto some laws that come through. He can veto it that way. But there are other laws and state laws that he doesn't have the power to veto. And because I think it will, it might be a hard fought battle. Because you can't get everybody that's supposed to be on the right side fighting for it. But when Roe versus Wade is overturned, it's not going to end abortion. We should fight to overturn it, but that's not it. We're not done yet. It goes back into the purview of the states. Then the states decide. Then some knothead in one of the states that says, no, more abortion. Some knothead goes, no, the state's wrong. I should have a right to kill people. So that goes into the courts, back up to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court can make another decision. That's why, what was it, last year or whenever it was that Kavanaugh kicked up, so I think it was the Louisiana statute about abortion. And everybody's like, oh, he's not really pro-life, he kicked it. No, he has to work under rule of law. They did it wrong. And he told them, you can't do it that way. Bring it back to us legally and we'll take care of it. Because people don't know simple civics. And it's sad. This isn't rocket science, it's not hard. But then they accuse him because he's working under rule of law and he kicks something back that would have advanced the pro-life agenda that was sent up from Louisiana. And we can't do it. That doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. I want to do what you're trying to do, but send it back through the right channels legally and we'll take care of it. That's what he said. And that's what he had to say. If people understood this, I think we'd have more people on the right side. More people defending the things that need to be defended. What would have happened if all of those Jews would have said, you're working with a Hasi heiress? No way. No, I'm sorry. We're not doing that. That wicked king, he had a law that went out to destroy all the Jews. I'm not working with him. But yeah, but now he's trying to save us. He's giving us... I'm not working with him. No. Wicked king wanted to destroy all the Jews. That would have been stupid. But that's what's happening today. Because the children of the world in this generation are wiser than the children of light. Can you imagine what would happen if all Christians came forward and supported these agendas? They'd get done lickety-split. Wouldn't take long at all. All the conservatives, all the Christians got behind the the president or the appointment of the judicial branches or electing the right people in the legislature, all of them got behind and did it. It wouldn't take no time at all. Within a decade, this place would be a totally different place. But they don't want it in a decade. They want it yesterday. And if we can't end abortion 100% right now, I'm not supporting anybody that won't do that. I'm not supporting anybody that won't shoot themselves in the head because they can't get their way. You think the president won't stand abortion? I do. I really do. I think he does. Can he do it that way? Can he just wipe it off the face of the earth? Can he just blank it out? Erase it? No. He can't. But if more people could get behind him and support the agenda to end abortion and stop siding with the enemy, then guess what would happen? It would be done pretty quick. Not right away, but pretty quick. We need to be like Esther and Mordecai and Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Work within and like the unjust servant, unjust steward, who was wiser than the children of light. Work within through legal channels the right way in order to get done what we want done. It's not going to happen overnight. We have to take baby steps, just like the socialists have been doing for the past 50, 60 years. And look at what they've gained. Socialists and liberals have been pushing, taking incremental baby steps over the last 5, 6 decades, and look what they've accomplished. All the corrupt laws that are on the books now? That's why. That's how it happened. Because the children of the world in this generation are wiser than the children of light.